Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Before we get to today's guest, we have a few announcements, guys. If you want to be a short-term shop agent, we are hiring in a number of markets, specifically the Smoky Mountains, Orlando, Myrtle Beach, Hilton Head, and the Poconos. Or if you live in a vacation market and you're an agent and you think that your market might be right for us, reach out to careers@theshorttermshop.com. We'd love to talk to you. Also, just want to make sure you guys are aware of the new book coming out, Smarter Short-Term Rentals on Bigger Pockets Publishing, comes out February 11th. You can pre-order that at biggerpockets.com/smarterstr. And I believe that is it for announcements today. So without further ado, I'll get to our super cool guest today. We have Jefferson Calloway, CEO of Cal Capital LLC. Jefferson, how are you doing today?
Great. How about you?
Can't complain. Doing pretty well. So let's just start off by having you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you got into real estate.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a native resident of Maryland, was stationed down in the military and as a helipilot and a warrant officer down in Alabama, Fort Rucker. And that is kind of where my whole real estate career started. So I bought my first rental there, moved back here to the East Coast. So I'm in like the Delaware, Pennsylvania, Maryland area now, you know, started purchasing companies. I'm in home remodeling. So it's mostly the home remodeling sector, which is good. They have a lot of synergy, real estate, home remodeling, et cetera. And now that's pretty much what I do. We've amassed, a 27 going on 30 door portfolio over 7 states, multiple contracting businesses that are, you know, doing a good 7 figures each now. And so the plan is just keep making money in one way, investing in it another, business and then real estate. And that's how we got here today.
All right. So Fort Rucker, that's not too far from me. I'm in the panhandle of Florida here. So I want to drill down on what made you get into real estate investing from a military career.
It actually was an accident. I didn't know anything about it. I mean, I was in my late 20s at the time, and I was only ever investing in stocks. I didn't know real estate investing was really even a thing. I knew a couple guys that flipped houses, but that was about it. I was stationed with another officer buddy of mine who's now a good friend, good mentor, also a real estate investor, James Lenord. And he came into the company one day. I was like, hey, I've got this little townhouse I'm trying to sell. Anybody looking to buy a house? And I had been renting my whole life at this point. So I was just like, you know, I've always wanted to stop throwing money away. And so we sat down, used no agents or anything. We just brokered the deal ourselves, sat at his dining room table, negotiated. And we landed on, this was 2019 at this point. So the housing market in Alabama is very cheap. I got it for $70,000 or something to that effect. And at that time, the interest rates were low. So I think my mortgage was like $400 or $500. Oh, it was wild. And so then he wasn't ready to leave the state yet. He was getting out of the military, but he wasn't ready to leave yet. And that's where he was living. So he's like, I'll actually rent it back to you and pay you in rent more than what your mortgage is. And so I'm like, dude, this is amazing. So I rented him a room out of the house because I used a VA loan for that, which means you have to live in the home. You're legally bound to. So I rented it out to him. And I thought I was making out like a bandit because I was making $600 on a $400 or $500 mortgage. And I thought I was just the bee's knees at that point. Well, it wasn't a few more years before I had already moved back to the East Coast. He had stayed there and then he was moving out that I had to really find a real stranger tenant. And he's like, relax, it's easy. Property management will do it for you. So I found a local property management company. And then they turned around and said, yeah, you can probably rent that thing for $1,100. And I was like, wow. Yeah. So that's when I really was introduced to rental properties. And I was like, all right, well, this is just one. And that's your average American car payment in cash flow, you know, $600-$700. So that really led me to say, all right, well, why don't I try to do it again up here? And I did. And then again. And that's how we ended up at, 27, 30 doors now.
All right. And so what types of properties are in that portfolio? Are they all single family long terms? What does that look like?
No, it's really a mix of everything. For starters, I immediately kind of saw the value, just a little bit of YouTube University, of multifamily, not large multifamily. That's what we're getting into now. But at the time I thought, okay, if I buy one property and there's one, two or three bedroom unit, you get a certain amount. But I could buy one property and you have three or four units. So that seemed like a no-brainer to me. My next two purchases at that point were both duplexes. And that same thing just turned into a very awesome lucrative deal. That one was in Maryland, one was in New Jersey. So all up on the East Coast where I had moved back to, that's where I'm originally from. And they both cash flowed great. They were, you know, $200,000 or $300,000, but each unit, and there was two of them, were going for $1,500. So it always met the 1% rule or close to it. And that's really how it snowballed into the multifamily, which is most of what I own now. There are still, like, my portfolio in Alabama is all single family. There's not a lot of multifamily down there. I think there's four or five single family houses down there right now. And they do okay. But, you know, most investors will tell you, if a single family goes vacant for 3 months, you're out $0 and everything's on you. Whereas multifamily, if I've got, you know, in Hagerstown, I've got a sixplex. If one or two units goes down, I'm still getting the rent for four. I'm still good. Not to mention one roof and five per every 4 to 6 units. So it's just a lot less maintenance in general. I just really like multifamily a lot more for that reason. Safer, more lucrative, et cetera.
Gotcha.
This episode is brought to you by Short-Term Rental Listing Advice. Join this Facebook group and post your listing to get advice from other hosts, including myself, on how you can improve your listing. Or just post your property so you can show off. Join us at strlistingadvice.com. That's strlistingadvice.com.
So what kind of salary are you working off of? I really want to kind of drill down on the financing part of this, because a lot of people, when they get into real estate investing, they think, oh, I can't do it, or I don't make enough money. This is for rich people. So what kind of salary are we talking about getting started with getting 20 units in about, or sorry, over 20 units in about 5 years-ish?
Sure. Well, it was less about making a lot and more about making what you did have go further. That's where house hacking really comes in. For anybody not familiar, that just means renting out some part. It doesn't even have to be an entire unit. You can rent out just rooms. That's how I started doing it. House hacking some part of your home. I've rented out, I've got a barn on my property now. I rent that out. It's got a horse stall in, I rent that out. So just renting out stuff is the best way to house hack. And the reason I mentioned that is because, so when I was in the Army, even as an officer and a helipilot, you're still only making $60,000, $70,000 a year. When I got out, I went on to become an X-ray engineer and did okay there. That was, you know, in the vicinity of $100,000. But, you know, if your living expenses are, even if they're pretty low, that's only going to buy you a few units a year. Where the velocity really comes is getting into these deals for very, very little out of pocket. That's where leverage comes in, borrowing, and most importantly, house hacking. Because if you live in the property, yes, it's not super comfortable to live with other people, to live with your tenants, to live with strangers. That's true. But if you really want to, you know, build a portfolio and become wealthy with it, you've got to sacrifice a little bit of comfort. So I did a ton of house hacking. I moved every single year for a good many years to accumulate a lot of single and multifamily. And that way you're only putting down, you know, 3.5%, 5%. In the VA's case, 0% down. I went to one of these settling tables with 13 cents. So you can really get a lot of velocity by using the right loan product, doing a lot of house hacking. And then later on, once house hacking isn't really an option for you, when you get a family or don't want to do uncomfortable stuff anymore, you can still use creative finance to get into deals cheaply. So now that I have a remodeling company, you know, I make a lot more than that. I have a lot of velocity, but even still, you don't need, beginners do not need a lot of money to get started in and build a portfolio.
So how many properties would you say that you did the house hack strategy?
Probably 6 or 7. I mean, I went every single year since, and one was twice in 1 year because we had a big mix up. Thinking an area was good when it wasn't, I had to move out of it prematurely. But yes, it was 2019 until just last year we're in a house hack right now. So my current house in the middle of Delaware I specifically looked for houses that have ADUs or additional dwelling units. I've got this, I love it. It's a great house, 3-4 bedroom house with a full basement, 2 acres of land, but it has a 1-bedroom apartment with its own kitchen attached to it. I hired it, rented it out to this old lady, Karen. She's amazing. Love having her. I forget she's there half the time, but she covers more than half the mortgage. And so that's a great example of a house hack. So I would say the first 6 or 7 properties, it was all just duplex, triplex, quadplex, 1 or 2 single families, but mostly multifamily.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you can build slowly. I think a lot of people get ahead of themselves and try to, you know, want everything to be get rich quick. You can build a real estate portfolio with conventional financing, but very little out of pocket. So not 25%, not 20%, 3% or 0% if you are a veteran with just house hacking. I think so many people just are not willing to put in the work to be uncomfortable and house hack. Because a lot, like you can, if you house hack a fourplex, you can house hack up to a fourplex. Then, you know, you're living for free and making cash flow. And then when you move out, it is straight cash flow. And I think just so many people, once they get to a certain point in their lives, maybe it's a certain income level or what have you, they're like, oh, I'm not going to live in an apartment anymore. I'm not going to live in a fourplex. I need my house, you know, it's my comfort place. And, you know, you get to that point eventually, but I think some people do that prematurely. And if you're willing to do that, even for a year and move out, then now you've got 4 units worth of income.
I could not agree more. You're exactly right. And a lot of people get married young, have kids young, and I completely understand that. I'm not taking anything away from them at all. You're exactly right. What I would say in that case is if you are, you know, I just have always been that way. I came from nothing and I'll go back to nothing anytime. I'm very low. I don't live outside my means, very frugal. So it was an obvious choice for me. But if somebody's in that situation where they're either not willing to be that uncomfortable, there are other ways too. I mean, as soon as I didn't have to house hack anymore, once I learned about creative finance is a big one, subject to and seller finance, I bought 10 units last 2023 with only using creative finance. And a lot of those deals were no more than 10 to 16 grand out of pocket for each property, many of them multifamily. And that's a great example of how to do it. It's never going to be zero out of pocket. It's possible. I did one like that. It's just much rarer, but it's still not very much out of pocket. So if you can even manage to save 10, 15% of your income, you can still do it without house hacking. There is good creative ways to get it done. It's just not as fast. So I would say either going that route, like one of the best deals I ever had, to your point earlier about whether they were long or short, we do have a couple short-term rentals. One of them was this big, beautiful single-family home down in Buckingham County, Virginia. It's a short-term rental. We call it the Lazy Bear Lodge. You can look it up. It's awesome. We decked it out with bear stuff. Our guests love it. But that was subject to. That interest rate is literally 2.25% interest. And I even convinced the seller to let us make installments on the down payment, which is unheard of in the lending industry. We paid $5,000 at close. A few months later, another $5,000. A few months later, another $5,000. I think it was all in only $15,000 or $20,000, but it was over a year. So actually, the income from the Airbnb probably ended up paying for that. So in a way, that was almost nothing out of pocket. So there are other ways to do it besides just house hacking if that's not the route you want to go.
So let's talk about that one for a minute. So you said Buckingham County, Virginia?
Yeah, it's right in between. If you drew a triangle, Charlottesville, Roanoke, Lynchburg, it'd be right in between those three. Like I live up here in Delaware. It takes us about 4 or 5 hours to get down there. But it's out in the middle of nowhere. And for some people looking for a wilderness paradise, that's exactly where you want to be. We're only an hour or two from Skyline Drive, Luray Caverns. Farmville is a famous little town there. And it does amazing. It's such a beautiful property. I still go there myself with my family a couple times a year just because we love being there. It's 10 acres. There's running water. The architecture is beautiful. Big fireplace, 3 floors, walkout basement. So it's a great spot.
So how much would you say that property grosses in a year?
Its first year, it did $60,000. So my thought, because we fix it up a little bit here and there all the time, we get a little better at marketing it, et cetera. We set up our software so that it books out more of those filler nights a lot more with algorithms and AI. So my guess would be this year, we'll probably do more than that, 60, 70, 75, okay. 80, something like that.
Okay. And what did you pay for it? Let's talk about that. What were the terms, et cetera?
Sure. So the purchase price, which was basically the remaining amount on the loan that we took over at 2.25% minus what we paid down, I think our purchase price was either 220 or 230, and it needed work. I went in myself and pulled up carpets and God, we did so much paint, fixtures, electrical. And so I think once we were all said and done, I mean, we just checked the valuation a few months ago. It's now worth between 350 and 400, and the mortgage is only about $1,000. And that place brings in, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 a month.
That's amazing. And for everybody listening who thinks that you can't find deals anymore, this is a really good example. So you paid 250, you said?
Either 225 or 230. So if you include the, and I don't remember if that was including the down payment or not. So probably between 220 and 240.
Okay. And it grossed 60-ish thousand on its first year. So guys, that is well above a 20% income to purchase price ratio, higher than that. So, which, you know, is considered like, oh my God, that's a great deal to get higher than 20%. So let's talk about how you found that deal. Were you looking for properties in that market and happened to find it?
That's really the beauty of our strategy. That's exactly why I do it that way. Because for one, I'm a remote investor. The reason I'm in 7 or 8 states is because when I get pitched a deal, I have learned how to manage, purchase, et cetera, renovate even. I've done a remote flip. Do everything remotely. So I'm now not relegated to any geographical area at all. I'll buy in California, I'll buy in New York City tomorrow. I don't care. So once you get the system down and you learn how to do it, that's why we're in so many states. That's where this property came from. I was not looking for stuff in Buckingham County, didn't even know it existed. But somebody posted a deal on the Facebook groups, which is where overwhelmingly I find deals nowadays amongst, you know, previous wholesalers, which I probably originally found on Facebook groups. But that's such a huge tool for wholesalers now. And wholesalers are a wealth of deals. You know, it behooves them. Their whole business is seeking out investors like me and selling us deals. So you have people just knocking down your door every day. I've got this deal. It's at this interest rate. You like subject two. I've got one of those. You know, you basically put yourself in a position where people are throwing deals at you and trying to make them as sweet as possible because that's how they make their money. So if you can invest anywhere and you have, you know, you spend a lot of time on Facebook groups, sifting through deals and sending messages and networking with wholesalers, it is unlimited the amount of deal flow that you can get from these people. And I only tell them, only contact me if you have something creative. So now I got seller finance and subject two deals in my inbox every single morning. It's amazing.
This episode of The Short-Term Show is brought to you by The Short-Term Shop. If you're interested in buying a short-term rental in one of the top vacation markets in America, just go to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected with an Agent. If you purchase a home with the shop, you'll have access to all of our client-only benefits, such as training on how to manage your short-term rental. So we'll teach you everything you need to know, from how to set up your Airbnb and Vrbo listings, to how to use the property management software that you'll need to streamline your business, all the way down to helping you source your local boots on the ground, like cleaners, handy people, etc. We've taught thousands of people just like you how to buy and manage their vacation homes from anywhere in the world. So head on over to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected with an Agent to get started. I do have to mention that we're brokered by eXp or else I get in trouble. We'll see you guys over there.
This episode is brought to you by Short-Term Shop Plus. Are you looking for someone to help you analyze a deal? Do you want instant access to lectures on management and short-term rental success? Join Short-Term Shop Plus for all of your vacation rental needs. STS Plus is open to the public and offered for the first time at a tremendous value. Also included is world-famous Management Monday, a weekly live session with everything you need to know about setting up your property and learning how to manage from a distance. Join today at stsplus.com. That's stsplus.com.
Yeah, I get a lot of wholesaler emails too. And to be honest with you, like 99.9% of the, they will send you a lot of deals, but 99.9% of the time it's garbage. It's trash. And to be honest with you, the worst of it to me is the trying to wholesale on market properties. And I know that's like a big thing in subject two, but it's fucking obnoxious. Excuse my language. And as somebody on the listing side of that, it is so obnoxious because they don't even look at what they're emailing us about. They send us a big form email. They send to every property on the market. They have no idea if my deal makes sense for anybody. And sellers are like, what is this garbage? Like, it is the subject to, I'm not talking shit about subject to altogether, but the ones who like just took some course and they're not even looking at what they're doing. They're just blasting everybody on the MLS. Like, they ruin the deal, potential opportunities for other people who might have been serious had they looked at the deal well. But now it's just like, oh my God, another subject to person who didn't even look at the deal. And now I got to waste my seller's time. And then if my seller even says yes, well, the person emailing didn't even look at it. So there's a good chance they're going to come back and say, oh, actually, it doesn't make sense or whatever. So anyway, if you're going to go down the subject to route, please don't be obnoxious is my request. That's my spiel on that. We have had, I will say, a few great deals for our sellers who maybe were not able to sell in other ways. A lot of people preach the over-theming. So buying a property for like pretty affordable and then theming the hell out of it. So we had a client in one of our groups today who is buying a $550,000 property that one of these property finders, short-term rental property finders found for him and then said, okay, well, in order to hit the projections that I'm giving you, you need to spend $250,000 on theming. You're going to spend half the price of the, you could buy a whole another $1 million property for 250 cash. So anyway, back to this deal. So they did a lot of theming, which was cool to get some more Airbnb income. But when we went to sell it, all that theming and stuff doesn't add value to the actual property, to the appraisal value of the property. You know, it's not like we're adding bedrooms. It's adding murals and things that look cool on Airbnb to guests, but don't really add any value to the actual real estate. So anyway, had a hard time selling it because it was a $3 million property. So all the showings we got, these people said, oh, you know, I love the space. I love the location, but for $3 million, I'm looking for something a little more luxury. They found it to be kind of childish. So anyway, that was an example of we were able to get that done subject to a very specific short-term rental buyer for the price that our seller wanted, which we would have had to take a pretty big price reduction to get it sold to like a vacation home buyer. So there can be really, really great opportunities with subject to. Typically works better for the buyer than it does for the seller. But in some cases where you can't get it sold in other ways, when everything aligns, like when the stars align for it, it can be a really great way to get things done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not for everybody. And the wholesaler, I agree. There are ones that aren't so great and they don't do it the right way. And you're right, especially about the amount of deals. I mean, truthfully, even if there were a 1% success rate on what percentage of deals you get that are good and ones that are bad, that'd be amazing. But you're exactly right. That's not the case. I would say I sift through probably 500 before I find a good one. But I mean, I'm probably sifting through 500 like per month, which means there's really no scarcity of deals. You just have to sift through a lot of them. And it's also because there's a lot of competition. The good ones that come through, you'll see on the thread on Facebook, it's got 200 or 300 comments on it. So definitely it doesn't come overnight. You're right.
Yeah. And that's kind of the downside of the Facebook deal finding is it's not private. The good ones, everybody in the world's going to see. But, you know, that's also the beauty of social media is being able to learn things and find things that you might not have been able to find otherwise.
Yeah. Plus, I have noticed, I mean, I've done a lot of repeat business with wholesalers. Once they know you're a serious buyer and you've bought from them before, they will reach out to you first before they put it out anywhere. That happens to me all the time now, and I love it.
Yes, and that
are a great way.
Yes, that is a very good call out. And same thing on the agent side. Like, we've got a huge backlog of 5,000 past buyers, and we know what people are looking for a lot of times. So if you're somebody, and to be honestly, aside from just closing deals, to be the first phone call from your agent or from a wholesaler or whatever, all it really takes is being somebody that they don't hate to answer the phone for. So like being nice is really it. If they like working with you, even if you've only closed one deal, even if you haven't closed any deals, if you're nice to them and you don't treat them like, you know, a servant, they will bring you deals because they like you. Being likable is something that really goes a long way in the real estate business. It's not really measurable, but you know, who's going to be the first person that a wholesaler or an agent calls? It's not going to be the guy that they hate talking to that treats them like garbage. It's going to be the guy who's been nice to them and they want to bring a deal to because they like you. So I think that's a big part of it too.
Yeah, so true. I mean, that goes for a lot of businesses, but you're exactly
right. Everything in life, right?
Yeah, it's amazing how low the bar is for some of these things.
It really
just be nice, be a good person, be on time. You're ahead of 99%.
Yep, that is for sure. So before we move on to the last three questions of the show, Jefferson, is there anything about your story that you feel like our listeners would benefit from hearing that I have not covered with you yet?
No, I mean, all I would say is just be bold. In this industry especially, I can't speak for any other industry that's not mine, but in business and in real estate especially, just jump in because I have seen so many more people that are broke because they are paralyzed by inaction or analysis than I have people who got into a bunch of deals and some of them weren't good and they got squashed. I almost never see the latter. If somebody's really bold and really brave, I'm not saying be stupid and jump in before, but most people spend years in YouTube University before they actually buy a single deal. And I'm like, you guys are wasting time. The best way to learn is jump in it. And I know that's said to death, but it's the truth. I mean, I had one deal in particular in Maryland, one of my first purchases. I overpaid for that property. I made a mistake. I was just excited to add to the portfolio and get moving. And now, because most of the time, real estate heals all wounds with time. Every time makes every deal a good deal in real estate. That property is now worth way over what I paid for it. It cash flows beautifully. I turned the bottom into an Airbnb. And so just take action and stop waiting around and stop being scared. So that'd be my only advice.
All right. Well, cool. We're about to ask you for some more advice. So question number one, what advice would you give 20-year-old Jefferson?
Poof. I mean, just a variant of the same thing. Start sooner. Everybody thinks that they have time and God, your 20s fly by. So if I could just do not a single thing different, I'll give up doing something different. Don't do anything different. Just do exactly what you did, Jefferson, sooner. If I had started when I was 20 instead of 30, good God, 30, right, 30s yeah. For Jefferson would be even more amazing than they are now. So I would say you're never too young ever. I see 17, 18-year-old kids out here doing this, even earlier than that. Start sooner, start a business, buy a business, get involved in business, because that's where money is really made. You can do it with W-2, that's fine, but business is much faster and real estate's a much better place to put it. So just start sooner.
Great advice. And what advice would you have for a new investor who's looking to get started today, current real estate climate?
Yeah, start buying. Stop paying attention to the market. Stop paying attention to interest rates because it's the same thing we see all the time. How long since 2008 happened? That's, I think, what started this whole kick. How long and how many times have you seen people wait and say, I'm going to wait for the market to crash. I'm going to wait for the market to crash. No, you're not, because that's almost it's impossible to time it, for one. And for two, it's probably not going to crash again like it did for a very long time, if ever. That was a crazy monsoon of you know, bad lending practices that caused that. And even now, it has bounced way back. So that would be just the number one thing is stop waiting around. Stop waiting for lower interest rates. You may not see those for 3 years and you're missing out on all this appreciation. And they come up with every excuse in the world not to do stuff. Like I remember during COVID how many times I heard, oh, it's a terrible time to buy because of look at all the competition. Yeah, why do you think there was so much competition? Because now look at all these people sitting pretty on 2% and 3% and 4% interest rates. So there's a reason not to execute every single year. Stop it. The best time to get in real estate was 30 years ago. The second best time is now.
I agree with that 100%. And last question, a little bit more fun. What is your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
I have to do two because it's a tie. Back when I was younger and I was first getting started with just finance in general, didn't matter what it was, business, real estate, stocks, don't care, was Ramen to Riches. It's like the smallest book because I hate reading. I know you don't hear that from anybody who's successful ever, but it's really the truth. It's a smaller book. Anybody can read it, you know, 5 or 6 days in the bathroom and you're done. And it just talks about really practical, basic stuff to just get moving and really start taking your finances seriously. And then the second was really just one of the more recent books I read, the e-myth, which is basically about delegating, because really in any business, especially real estate, if you're doing everything yourself, you are hamstringing yourself. I put every single thing in property management, and now I can invest anywhere in the United States. In my business, I delegate everything I can, and now I can step out like right now during the middle of a work day. And so the e-myth really just teaches you entrepreneurship in all its facets, delegating in all its facets, and teaches you how to, you know, keep moving forward and scale, because that's really the only way to get hyper successful in this life.
Yep. E-myth is always a good one. You don't want to be the pie lady.
That's right.
All right. Well, Jefferson, thank you so much for coming on. If our listeners want to find you, follow you, all that fun stuff, where can they do that?
Really the best place is my social media. I check it all the time. That's where all my interactions happen. So if you just type my full name, Jefferson Keith Calloway, in Facebook, Instagram, or just email. I had my last podcast, a lot of contacts via email, and that's fine. Jefferson@calcapital.us. That's not .com. It's .us. Any one of those places, DM me, email me.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jefferson. It's been a great episode.
Yeah, it has. Thanks so much, Avery. Really appreciate it.